I'm Richard Porter.
I'm Johnny Smith.
And this is Smith & Sniff, a podcast in which two friends talk about cars, and this week, Johnny's road rage.
As you might know, well, in fact, you do know, because somebody messaged us on the Smith & Sniff website, and I think I got DM'd as well via Instagram about me driving. I was on the road in the taxi doing a long journey yesterday, and I really enjoyed driving the Tokyo taxi. It's incredibly soft and quiet, albeit with no Bluetooth.
How long was this journey?
2.5 hours each way. It's not an insanely long journey, but the point is I wasn't supposed to be doing it in the taxi. I was actually supposed to be doing it in my new long-term Renault Zoe ZE50, but weirdly, it didn't charge overnight, and it said there was an earthing problem or an isolation problem that isn't satisfactory, and so therefore it just wouldn't talk to the charger. So I was a bit confused by that, and then I was in a fluster because I was leaving really early, and I put some trinkets in the car because I was going to see the Allegro and have some important chats about the Allegro project. And you know when you're like, you're hell bent on, you've planned out your morning or your event for the day, and I'd already knew that car, I was going to make some Bluetooth phone calls I've got to catch up on, blah 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 blah, couldn't do it because no charge. So I thought, well, damn it, I have to take the Tokyo taxi. And actually I realised it wasn't taxed, so while I was eating my muesli really quickly, I had to tax it. I don't know if this sounds a bit first world problem-y, like I couldn't take one of my cars, so I took one of my other cars.
My bloody free car wasn't working, so I had to take one of the many other cars that I own.
It was a bit like, it is a bit like that, but what's weird is I seem to have inadvertently got paparazzied on the way. Although I left early in the morning, a lot of van drivers, tradesmen on the way to jobs, and it's always the dude in the passenger seat who seems to have an owl-like head that can turn. Yeah. So his body is still fully back on the seat of the passenger seat of the van, but the head's 180 backwards because he's doing that whole crane back thing, and he's either doing Hans sign language, sometimes positive, sometimes negative, depending on the scenario. But it was always great to clock what the van passenger's body language was doing. But yeah, they seem to appreciate the weirdness of the Tokyo taxi.
I'm slightly thrown, well, not thrown, but I noticed that when I asked you how long the journey was, you expressed it in time rather than miles.
Oh, it's 110 miles.
Okay. But it just reminds me because it was an ongoing thing. I guess it probably still is, during filming of Top Gear and the Grand Tour with TV's Jeremy Clarkson. He'd be moving between locations and he would say to someone on the production team, how far is it to the next location? And they would say, it's about half an hour away. And he would go, no, I want to know mileage. And he was obsessed. He used to drive him nuts. Don't express distance as time.
Really?
And I was like, it does make sense. And he went, no, if you tell me the mileage, I'll figure out how long it'll take. And I'm like, yeah, but, you know, 5 miles across downtown Tokyo will take you a lot longer than 5 miles across the Nevada desert. So in a way, it makes more sense to manage your expectations by telling you time. And he went, I can work out the time from the distance. Honestly, it was every time.
I reckon
he'd go, how long is it to the next location? Or he'd say, how far is the next location? Someone would go, it's 45 minutes. And he'd go, no, in mileage.
Oh, he's. Do you know what? That's come from working with Tiff.
Do you think?
That's a racing driver thing. Because it'll be like, no, I'll tell you how long it'll take me. You tell me how many miles it is. And then, of course, I've got to try and better that. Because if I said to you, well, I did 110 miles yesterday in rush hour and it took me 2.5 hours, he'd instantly be like, I can shave that down.
Yeah.
I get that down to 210. 210, no problem. 210, don't drink anything, no need for a piss stop. I'm in, I can do this. And that, I bet you that's Jeremy's mindset. He's inherited that.
But it's really weird because he is a man who is quite obsessed with time. Like, he sort of has a slight of, like, you know, John Cleese's character in Clockwise, the 80s movie.
Oh, yeah.
Who's completely obsessed with time. there's a whiff of that about Jeremy sometimes, where he'll just go, oh no, we're out of time, oh, we haven't got enough time, oh, time, which is, you know, he's just sort of like, he's very aware of time. And
is it like that song by Culture Club, Time, Clock of the Heart, where I think I remember him, I counted that Boy George said the word time 49 times in the song, Time, Clock of the Heart, because I remember it being a deeply boring song.
Yeah, it's not one of their classics, is it?
No, it's just there's too much of the word time.
It's quite good for the replace heart with arse game, I suppose, but it's not otherwise worth. I was thinking about Karma Chameleon the other day and what an odd song it is lyrically.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Karma Chameleon. What?
Yeah.
I mean, I kind of get it. It's, in a way, it's quite clever, but at the same time, you just go,
it was all about the German coach building company, and it just got lost in translation. It was the Carmen Chameleon. You come and go. What? You come here and you slightly rejiggle the body shell, and then you go.
You take a long time to build a convertible.
Yeah,
that could blend into its background, and they just simply technology does not allow that. It's 1982, for God's sake.
He loves it. Our boy George is massively into Corrados, Beetle convertibles, certain quite expensive motorhomes. Yeah, he's really into it. Loves a bit of Carmen Chameleon. It was that chameleon paint that TVRs used to be painted in that was about £5,000 a litre. So if someone keyed it, basically the car had to be burnt and thrown away.
Yeah. Well, they did that on some in the later days of MG Rover. They had a whole range of those flip paints. What were they called?
It's a holograph, not monogram.
Well, they were called the umbrella term for the special order paints was the monogram range, and there were bloody loads of them. I think they used to buy them off the shelf from, you know, PPE or someone. But even so, there's something that wasn't sort of celebrated enough about the dying days of MG Rover was that they used to build a slightly mad combination of cars on one line, because on the Rover 75 line, they were also doing MGZTs and the estate versions, and they were doing front and rear-wheel drive versions.
Bloody hell.
Obviously. And then they would line build special order paints, in that they would just go through the same process as any other car, where a lot of companies doing special order paints, they had to pull them off the line and do them separately. And they used to get other car companies coming to have a look round Longbridge to see how they were doing it. Because it was actually, from a manufacturing point of view, apparently it was quite impressive. Even though the place itself was sort of slightly scruffy and dirty, it was actually, you know, a lot of skill there.
Wow, that is... I mean, it is... I actually, weirdly, as I was going round the M42 around Birmingham, I did actually see a V8 MGZT.
Did you?
Yeah, yeah. In fact, I heard it before I saw it, because it came flinging down the slip road, and it had aftermarket pair of exhausts on it, which were definitely stainless, because you know when you actually get a glint from chrome on a bumper and it really fires into your retinas. I got that off the back boxes of this car.
Wow.
Yeah, and there I am in my near silent LPG taxi, and and this thing comes hammering down, then comes off the throttle at high revs, and it really cackles away. I was impressed, though. I know we've talked about these before, but I do quite like them. Yeah, and then, of course, because I hadn't planned the journey I was doing to be in the taxi. And the taxi, if the listeners are aware, is LPG only, a factory LPG car. So it doesn't have a
filter. Now, I was going to ask you this. How many miles do you get from an tank of LPG?
I get a lot. 400 and something kilometres.
Okay.
Well, as in, I mean, like for a taxi, so given that it's mostly
250 miles, say.
At least 250. Yeah. I mean, it's a colossal tank. Or so I thought. So I drove to the Midland Performance and Retro, who have got the Allegro, doing all the Allegro stuff.
And where are they?
They are in Bridge North in Shropshire.
Oh, are they?
Yeah.
I know so Bridge North. I kind of know it.
Well, it's great. So I went there, all good, and started to set off. And I thought, I'm going to stop quite soon because I need lunch. Fancied a sandwich. And out of nowhere, I didn't even check my LPG app, which I have. And it just, it immediately, I saw a fuel station coming up in the distance. I thought, I wonder if they sell any half-decent food. And I rocked in because I saw, oh, the food selection looks good. And then, sure enough, it just happened to have LPG. I pull in, and just as I'm faffing with the LPG sort of ray gun, the attachment, this absolutely massive American motorhome comes in, and it was called something like Utah Sex Tourist. I can't actually remember what it was called. But anyway, it was a really nice, it was huge. It was huge. It came in, and because the guy and his wife, obviously so skilled at LPG refilling, they managed to start filling before me. And then I started filling. You know, with LPG, you have to hold your finger on the button for the entire time of the operation. So instead of squeezing a lever on a fuel pump...
I've never filled an LPG.
Okay, you have to. You have to put it in, lock it into place on the car so the nozzles lock, a bit like when two dogs have sex. And then you press a button on the pump. It's just a simple button, but you have to hold it for the entire duration of the fill-up. As soon as you let go,
so the button
stops.
Is not on the nozzle, it is on the pump.
It's on the pump itself.
Base unit.
Yes, it's
right,
on the big unit.
Gotcha.
I bring my car. Great. I go in and pay. I then go to the toilet, and I faff around and realise I wanted some more confectionery, so I go back and join the queue again. I come out. The dude is still holding onto the button of this motorhome, and it sort of took me by, because I thought, shit, he's been there for 10 minutes, maybe. And I say, crumbs, you got a big tank. And that, he went, yeah, well, this one's 280 litres. I went, what? And he went, oh no, but the one I've got to fill the one at the front as well, that one's 100, that's just for cooking and the fridge and stuff.
Jesus.
So I said, hang on a minute, you've got 380 litres of LPG on board. This is like, it's like the Hindenburg. It's just...
How much is it per litre?
It was 69p.
He said,
yeah, he said, so my, my motorhome does 10 to the gallon. It's a V10 petrol Ford. Is it a Triton engine?
Yeah.
Yes. You know, cab chassis jobber. American listeners will know exactly what I'm talking about. But he said, this LPG of this sort of price... with a tank this size, he said, it makes this all worth it, because without that, we would never own a motorhome like this, because it would just cost you, you know, it cost you like $2,000 to drive to Scotland, and then you'd have to live in relative squalor, whereas you could have just driven there in a thrifty car and stayed in a five-star
hotel.
Yeah, and your wife would be like, yeah, cheers for that, what a great idea you had. But yeah, it was just, I couldn't believe the size of the tanks involved. And he said that that's not the biggest. There are bigger ones that he could have fitted. You're just like, wow, he'd rolling around with like, you know, nearly half a ton of LPG on board. That's amazing. Made me feel quite inferior, because I thought my tank in the Tokyo Cedric was actually quite impressive. But anyway, I realised also that I quite like the smell of LPG when it's out of the tailpipe. It's a very tangy. In fact, I'll tell you what I liken it to. It's the difference between when you've just done lots of either exercise or heavy lifting, which I've done a lot of recently, just moving lots of boxes to and fro. It's the difference between fresh perspiration and BO.
Right.
BO is your sort of your diesel tailpipe. Uh-huh. It's just not, nobody likes the smell of BO, right? And it's just grotty. But fresh perspiration, there's a tang to it, and there's a feeling of achievement. I don't know where I'm going with this.
I'm not sure.
I don't know where I'm going, but LPG definitely has a sort of fresh perspiration kind of tang to
I'll have a sniff next time
actually sniff petrol, you'll actually sniff LPG.
I couldn't get past the fact that LPG refueling sounds a bit... Sorry, if you like drum and bass later on, spinning some discs, as it were, LPG refueling. But
you sounded like Steve Lamacq then.
Yeah, that was a bit Stoive. Stoive Lamacq on the evening session. I have my experience of LPG was slightly tainted by I drove. My brother used to live in Australia for a bit, and he had a Mitsubishi Magna, which was LPG dual fuel.
Oh,
and I drove it when I was down there. It was a V6. I can't remember, like 3.3, I think it is. And you know, sort of decent enough bargy sort of car. But when you flicked it onto LPG, it ran rough as arseholes. It was horrible, and it was noticeably down on power. I mean, I imagine it was just not a very good installation. But I just thought, this is dog shit.
It's just not been set up properly. A lot of people don't bother get them set up properly, or they don't get them serviced. And yeah, then it doesn't work. It's a bit like not having your boiler or your central heating ever serviced. You don't think about it because it's just not a very interesting subject. But
I'm having my boiler serviced tomorrow, in fact.
Oh, you are.
It's a good time to do it in the summer.
Rich. Oh, always get it done in summer. Always.
My wife was the one who went, "I think the boiler needs a service. We should probably do it now before everybody wants their boiler serviced when the weather gets colder."
Really
and
true.
They all switch them on and they don't work. And yeah,
she's so right.
She's very wise.
And it's also buying the children's sledges. Summer's the time for that. That's what I always.
Oh.
Yeah, I always get the best deal on a sledge. It's a bit like buying a convertible in January. I do that as well. I love it.
Popping down the sledge quarter to eye up some bargains.
Hey, I've bought an incredible Austrian sledge, which was very rare in Britain. And it was on eBay in the middle of summer for like, I don't know, 12 quid. I just bought it and then stashed it in the rafters of the shed for a snowy day. Sure enough, it's the best sledge in the world. Everyone keeps going, "Where on earth did you get that from?"
Well, I mean, if I was going to buy a sledge made anywhere, I think Austria would be pretty high on the list.
Quite.
I would say.
Quite.
Compared to, you know, some other countries. Austria seems like it's good sledge terrain.
Exactly. Yeah.
I don't think I've ever been to Austria. Have I ever been to Austria? I'm not sure.
I think you probably. It's one of those. I've been to it a lot, but only for very short stints of time. I'd like to go to. I bet there's an incredible model railway club in Austria. They love their models.
Yeah, as we established a while back on the podcast, there's an incredible model village in Germany, isn't there?
It's Hamburg. I think it's Hamburg.
Yeah.
We do need to go to that very much. In fact, I'd go there just for that, just to go to that for the day, and then I get on a plane and go.
I was gonna ask you another really boring question about LPG, but I'm almost like, I think, I can't be bothered. It's just...
What about LPG?
Well, just doesn't it make the car more thirsty? Obviously, there's no comparison because your taxi only runs on LPG, but is it not
It's less combustible. My friend Nick Farrow, who actually his business is LPG, mostly for motorhomes and fitting inside caravans, you know, like cooking and all the appliance fittings and stuff.
Yeah.
But I'm pretty sure when an engine runs on it, it is down on power, so it's slightly less efficient, but it burns cleaner, so the internals of the engine are kept in better condition, even though it burns hotter. And there was another fact that I was trying to remember. Of course, the cost of LPG is such. It's about half of what the equivalent unleaded fuel is at all times. So whatever unleaded is doing, you can cut it in half for the price of LPG.
And I just hate it. You see old Range Rovers and old Jeep Grand Cherokees and things like that, and they've got, usually without the cap on it for some reason, those sort of LPG socket. Crudely slapped onto the
It's been a hole sawed into the side of it.
And I always just go, "You've just ruined that car. That's what you've done because you're a cheapskate."
I'm down with LPG if done right. It has to be done right.
Well, there we go. I wanted to tell you about the world's most Saab man, who I saw last weekend or whenever it was. I can't remember now. But yeah, I was in our local tube station car park of all places, and there was a gentleman seemingly admiring his own car. He was standing talking to somebody else, but he was gesturing towards his car, and his car was a very tidy late model Saab 9-3. So fair play. An attractive car in its own way, but he was, I think, the most Saab man I've ever seen, because he was of a certain age, I would say late 60s, but in, you know, in good nick,
slim build,
slim, exactly, a slender gentleman.
Yeah.
And you know, chaps of that kind of age who've still got a really good head of hair, it's an impressive thing to see. And he'd got sort of thick grey thatch,
yeah,
in sort of slightly sort of quiffed up. He had the look of a very likeable university professor.
Yes.
And he was wearing a a sort of lightweight tweed jacket, like a summer weight, summer spec tweed jacket, if such
summer,
a thing exists.
Summer weight sports jacket, is it?
Yeah.
Brilliant.
And I couldn't quite see what was under it, but I sort of, in my head, I've now painted in a waistcoat, but that might be a bit much. I don't think he had a waistcoat on.
Might be a bit much.
But I just looked at him and I just went, you are the epitome of Saab. So Saab-y, just that whole college professor vibe. And
also quite a laid-back guy. If he was your neighbour, yeah, he'd be interesting. Not nosy, he'd be interesting. And he wouldn't boast about all the things he's seen and done unless you probed him.
Well, now, my next-door neighbour, funnily enough, is of that ilk, although he doesn't have a magnificent thatch of hair. But he's an extremely affable chap, and he is a retired neurologist. And he's always very, very pleasant to talk to, and you have a good chat. It never occurred to me before, but he really should have a Saab. He doesn't. He has a VW Up since he retired. But
oh, you told me about the Up. Well, Up is good, and of course Saab doesn't exist anymore.
Well, that's true. I should ask him if he's ever had a Saab.
I know. Why don't you do a Saab test? Why don't you contact a few Saab owners over the next couple of months and get them to strategically park every week? A different Saab is parked on your road within his eye line of his front window.
Well,
and maybe
there
see if it catches the man's eye.
There's a 9.3 Cabrio, a little bit scruffy, that has started turning up on our street, and I don't know whose it is. But it's not his. I'm pretty certain it's not his.
Maybe he's got loads of Saabs. He just refuses to park them nearby. It's like a stealth.
Next time I'm talking
Saab
to him,
I'll just
casually drop it into conversation. If the 9.3 Cabrio is nearby, I'll just go, oh, that's a nice Saab. And if he very enthusiastically goes, yes, isn't it? Or, oh, no, I'd have looked after it a bit better than that. Look, it's got a ding in the door. Ooh, they've let the hood get some moss on it. Then I'll know. He'll give himself away by babbling about Saabs.
It's funny you should bring up Saabs, because our mutual friend Tom Ford, near where he lives, is a person who's got a Saab 900 turbo on the drive, and it's been on the drive for well over 10 years. It's black. I keep meaning to put a letter on it to say, listen, you're obviously not using this, because it's on skates. It was on those
what?
It was on those four wheel skates.
Yeah.
And someone had removed the turbo badge, but because of the dirt and the moss, you could still see it said turbo on it, which I thought was quite funny. And
That's excellent.
It's been there for well over 10 years. I walked past
There's a design term for that, isn't it? It's like sort of using the negative space to, or something.
Oh, that's what it is, yeah. Is it like nature's drop shadow?
Yeah.
Is that what it is? I really, really, I'm really annoyed, because I went past it 3 days ago and it isn't there. There's just the skates and a very light patch on the drive where the Saab had protected the drive from any algal growth. And I'm actually really pissed off. I messaged Wookie and went, where's the Saab gone? Have you bought it?
What have you done with it? Is this you? Have you taken the Saab?
Well, it was, you know, it was a landmark to me. It was like a really cool car that seemed to never go anywhere. And yet it never looked like it was ever deteriorating. It just looked the same as it did when I first saw it 10 years ago. But I'm annoyed that I never put the letter through the door. I'm very hacked off about it.
Well, you could still do it, but the letter could now say, where's your Saab gone? I want answers. Now.
Yeah, that's true. What, anonymous or signed by me?
No, I think you need
address.
To front up. Go, Johnny Smith, Saab detective.
Saab detective. Saab beast.
Maybe you could, you're always filming stuff anyway. Maybe you could make some kind of sort of very moody Scandinavian-style drama about this, where you are Johnny Smith, Saab detective. From the Saab department of the local police.
Maybe it should be Saab barn finding.
Yeah, well, you just know you're on the trail of a missing Saab. It's good viewing. You don't do a lot. Wear a big jumper and stand around sighing quite a lot. And
I
think you'll be halfway there.
Do everything quite slowly, and I also talk very softly.
Very slowly.
I never talk aggressively.
Yeah.
No, I'm quite happy to
sometimes
try.
Sometimes you're just sitting having a coffee for a long time.
Yeah. Oh, you know, you were talking about your how 3D number plates offend you, and 4D doesn't make any sense. I saw a lot of 3D plates when I was driving in the taxi on the on my, my trip the other
day. They're rife, aren't they?
There's a lot of them. But I, and I don't know if I mentioned it before, but I thought it could be the ultimate plate for a Discovery 2 owner. Because you know, you know, Land Rover Discoveries have got, they've still got old-fashioned rain gutters and they've still got quite old-fashioned window rubbers from memory.
Yes.
Because they're quite an old design of car, aren't they?
Yeah, and they've got that very sort of fiddly B-pillar.
That's right.
You've got door frame, central bar, door frame against, like, really sort of messy looks now because everything has been much more... Sort of
everything's all flush-fit windows and stuff, but they were
design-wise, yes.
So I was thinking maybe a Land Rover Discovery 2 owner is the only person that should have a 3D plate because what you can do... Because they're essentially, the raised digits are perfect ledges for moss. And if you look, all Discoveries have moss growing out of the waistline... Because of the way the car is designed, there's lots of traps for seedlings and things to drop. And my mate, actually, who lives down the road, who has a Disco too, is very proud of the fact that it has moss growing in it. And it, even when he washes it, he leaves the moss, which I think is quite funny.
Well, I had that with my Defender because on the one hand, you know, it's like it's one of the last of the line and I should look after it and keep it all nice. But it started getting moss going in the window runners, the back windows. And that's absolutely standard Defender, you know. They all do that, sir. And I, on the one hand, I was like, oh, I should, you know, keep this car in good nick. On the other hand, I'm like, it's not a Defender if it's not got moss growing in the window runners. It's. So I've sort of picked some of it out, but there's still a bit in there.
Well,
you've got to.
But if you had three D plates, you could buy them, maybe wipe a bit of Greek yogurt on them, stick them on, and
wipe a bit of Greek.
Yeah.
What? Does moss grow on Greek yogurt? Is this? I'm not.
I've seen it because of, you know, like good quality live culture yogurt encourages growth, doesn't it? Literally, it encourages growth.
Well, yeah, but that's a different. That's bacteria. It's not moss. It's different. It's different.
Well, wipe a bit of Greek yogurt on it. Wipe a bit of moss on it, so there'll be some spores. Put your plates
on. Not Greek yogurt. A car would be covered in moss. Anyway, well, I mean, I'm not putting 3D plates on my car.
Kefir? Is it kefir?
Kefir. What I wouldn't object to is proper old school 3D plates where the numbers and letters were sort of bevelled.
Oh, yes.
You know, proper, like... So they're individually silver on black. Screwed on. I can't stand those plates on non-period cars. But just very raised, chunky letters, but properly sort of, you know, like...
I know.
Almost, they're like something from a children's play set.
Yeah, you can still buy those. There's a company in Cornwall that make them.
What?
Yeah, hang on.
Is it because they don't realise it's not the 60s anymore?
Probably. Let me find it. Hang on. I know exactly...
While you're doing that, I've got a little bit of housekeeping to do from last week because we had loads of messages last week, a lot of them about public information films.
Oh, the scary ones.
I think some people were genuinely a little triggered, perhaps, by the memories of these films that had haunted their childhood.
Well,
lots of people brought up other ones. There's far too many to start reading out, but broadly people were sharing links. I've forgotten the one with the guy with the big fishing rod that he's using near power lines.
The fishing rod guy.
Someone reminded me of the one with that was reminding you the dangers of mixing radial and cross ply tyres. With a Morris 1100 in it that rolls over. And then somebody sent me an incredible one which has got it's about the dangers of sheep. And it's got a mini clubman being driven in a spirited way, and it's just reminding you you shouldn't drive fast near unfenced sheep.
Oh, what? Because if there's a sheep in the road, you either hit it or swerve it and crash.
Yeah,
okay.
I'll name check. Only one person sent me that. Gareth Brown emailed us the sheep one, and he pointed out I'll stick it on the Patreon for people who want to watch it and who are patrons. It's got at the very end of it, there's just one final very plaintive sheep bar on the soundtrack, which is quite remarkable.
Oh, how odd.
Loads of love/fear for public information films. But then A guy calling himself Evan is Great on YouTube put a comment under the last podcast on there about
on that side of things.
Helicopters flying. Yes, well, on the helicopters flying around pylons side of things. He says, my dad was an electrician, and back in the late 70s, he did a stint of checking pylons via helicopter. The helicopter pilot was an ex-Vietnam vet and was apparently a bit mad. One day, my dad mentioned to the pilot he lived near the line of pylons they were examining, and the pilot asked him to point out the house on the map at the briefing. Halfway along the inspection route, the pilot went rogue and flew to our house, going low enough to wave to my mum, who was hanging out washing, which then all blew away.
No way!
Yeah.
So, wow, ex-Vietnam pilot knew no fear. Wow.
Yeah, it's quite mad. Also on that note, because
Howling Mad, not Jeff Evans. Murdoch.
Howling Mad Manweb expects pylons for a defunct electricity company. One of our patrons, Jeff Evans, on the same note, just said he enjoyed the pylon chat, but then he sent me a link. He said his girlfriend's an artist in New York and she particularly paints pylons.
Cool.
So I looked it up. He said Watford Pylons, a painting is called Watford Pylons, is one of his favourites. I looked it up. It's really, really nice painting. And she's got various other ones of sort of pylons and other kind of tall structures against kind of very nice...
that sounds excellent.
Cloudy, sunsetty sort of skies. Yeah, emma-frost.co.uk is her website.
Well, two things. One, when you're travelling abroad, if you're in France, Germany, Netherlands, Belgium... look at the different pylons. They have different designs,
yes.
And some of them genuinely look like Space Invaders from the old video game, Space Invaders.
It's weird, isn't it? You go to countries that are quite near us, like France, Germany, Spain, Italy, whatever.
Yeah.
Or you go to countries that are further away, but that we feel like we have some kinship with because we speak the same language, like the US or Australia or New Zealand. And things are the same, but they're also different just in sort of subtle ways that can throw you off.
Yeah.
And I always think pylons is one of them. The way their trains look is another.
I was just about to say trains. Yeah.
This is a train. It looks exactly the way a train should look, and yet it doesn't look like our trains, and therefore I'm slightly uneasy around it.
Well, all foreign trains are better than our trains, and the system and the price of the tickets are just much better than our trains. So, I mean, we don't go too deeply into that, but definitely Euro trains work better than ours.
Oh, my God. I once got on a train in Switzerland. Imagine how on time that was. And I noticed as it pulled into the station that the front pointy bit, I'm sure it's a technical term, had a little Pininfarina logo on it.
Mm.
So not only are Swiss trains incredibly on time, in my experience, but they're also designed by Pininfarina.
That's fantastic. How stylish.
Yeah.
Also, the little jingle in European train stations are better than ours. I prefer them to ours.
Yes.
We used to have dun, dun, dun. But I don't know if we've still got that anymore. We probably don't.
I'm not sure we do, do we? I can't remember. Well, they stopped doing announcements, didn't they? And a lot of them was at airports. I can't remember now.
They probably use, I don't know, a clip of UK Grime now just to chime, just to resonate with people buried in their phones. I don't know. There's probably Skepta does it. I don't know. They're not going to use dun, dun, dun. They'll use something else.
We have had loads of messages about all sorts of stuff that we touched on in the last podcast. Probably says a lot about how weird and freewheeling the last show was, even by Smith and Stiff standards. But there's an email from a guy called Ed that I just wanted to read out because we talked about four-wheel drive transits. Ed says, in the late 90s, when I'd finished my body shop apprentice, instead of, he means as in, you know, car bodywork, not Anita Roddick's house of smellies. When I finished my body shop apprenticeship, instead of enjoying the high wages at the time and getting on the property ladder or paying X amount in repayments on a Punto GT or similar, I rented a unit on a local farm. This was due to my passion for old VWs, which enabled me to squeeze in a shitload of junk and still have a spray booth. The farmer had a brother who was in prison for ecstasy dealing. While in prison, he started a correspondence with a traveller lady who he married while in prison.
Wow.
This is why I started reading this and went, all right, you've got my attention. This is not
in prison for ecstasy dealing. Wow. You don't even grow ecstasy on farms either.
Well, maybe you do. We just didn't know about it.
Yeah.
I mean, who knows what they're up to. Ed says, as such, the small field he was given up the lane, I guess this is when he got out of prison, the small field he was given up the lane was regularly visited by New Age types in their dodgy van conversions.
Of course.
These shoddy old patchouli-smelling shit heaps provided a source of income for me and the old guy in the unit next door. They would always pay strangely well, with the old guy getting rent and me getting some rather good weed. One day, they rolled in with their dodgy Aztec-slash-hemp-slash-dreddy hoodies in a pair of Mark III Transits that were riding rather high and needing some work. After being approached for the fitment of a log burner...
of course, yeah.
...ply panels, service and other bits and bobs, I got to have a good look at their recent upgrades. I was fascinated. VW had only done synchro vans at the time, but here was I looking at not one but two four-wheel drive Transits. They were very well done, with build quality very good, rust unusually minimal, and even lacked the wiring mess of XAA or RAC workhorses. No amount of haggling could secure me one of these unicorns, and as such, the required work was carried out with a heavy heart. So Ed wanted to buy these things, basically. We'd never get the chances. One was written off, and the other was seized by the police.
Oh, my God.
The vans have faded from memory until your episode, but I have fond memories of being up a stepladder painting one black and green while being rather stoned.
Why would you paint it black? That's brilliant.
I just wanted to read his PS, which is the killer for me. He says, to clarify, I haven't been stoned for about 20 years. Thanks a lot. Best regards, Ed. PS, I got lice doing those vans. Thanks to that and a receding hairline, I've never had long hair since. So there
Seriously.
You go. If you're working on a Krusty's four-wheel drive Transit, wear a shower cap is clearly the advice there.
Oh, my gosh, he got lice.
Lice from some
working
sort of
on a New Age traveller, man.
on a Ford Transit County. I mean, quite a good.
A
have that converted
story.
To camper spec. And the four-wheel drive is going to be a boon for, you know, festivals and all that kind of malarkey, if that's what
well,
you're
Well, look,
doing.
The term now is sort of overland camping, and it's become a thing, hasn't it? To put chunkier tyres on sprinters and all that stuff, and your sort of zombie apocalypse camper look. Oh, yeah. It was being done years ago, pre-internet. I remember in Somerset, all the New Age travellers, they used to have loads of stuff like that. But I suppose I hadn't quite clocked. Yeah, four-wheel drive's perfect, because if you need to get out of a rave and it's been heavy rain... And say you've been at the rave for 3 days, which is typically what a New Age traveller would. You wouldn't just pop in for sort of 9 hours, your typical rave. You'd go,
what are you doing tomorrow?
You'd go there.
There's a rave down the road. I'm just going to pop in for a bit. No, you've got to commit fully to the rave, haven't you?
You don't pop into a rave, do you? You're there, you put roots down. And obviously, in that case, if you've got a crusty van, you need to get out. You don't want to do that sort of push of shame with like two rooster tails of soil everywhere.
No. Well, I mean, it's just, you're digging in because you've had a log burner put inside, and it's just adding weight that's only,
oh, absolutely.
It's bogging you down.
Well, you've
had
25 friends sitting in said ex-telecom van.
I don't,
and everyone's
not even
been...
25 friends. I think it's four people you know and seven that you don't, but that you sort of too.
Oh,
like
yeah.
You like their vibe, so you're letting them stay.
Yeah, like one of them swapped a bag of apples for a bong, and then the other one, I don't know, mended your socks whilst off their face, all the socks are now a bit wrong and crooked.
Darned the holes with straw. While we're at the housekeeping desk, just one more thing. One of the other topics we touched on last week was our animals thick. We've got some great on-the-ground evidence for this from Rob, who says, gentlemen, I think I can verify in some small way your theory that some animals are perhaps not as bright as others of the same type. We have two West Highland Terriers, sisters from the same litter. One, on the appearance side of things, is very typical of the breed. The other just looks like a white any brand terrier. I like any brand. So yeah, just a generic terrier. The better looking one is thick. I mean, it barks at the birds and flies constantly, has no idea at all how to play, cannot chase a ball or any other toy literally with any ability whatsoever to have fun.
Oh my gosh, and they're sisters.
The other, completely opposite, and can hide food, and even when they do that terrier thing of chasing animals 10 times bigger across fields, the ugly one always finds her way back to us. The other one, nope, have to go and find her. Utter dimwit.
So, there we go. True, isn't it?
Thank you, Rob. There we are. Science in action. Sisters, and yet the good-looking one is, and I'm quoting Rob here now, thick.
Oh, I forgot to mention about that tractor, about the county tractor. Interesting.
Oh yeah, what about it?
Oh, did you see the intel that I got back from that guy?
I was trying to read it on my phone, and my daughter was sort of attacking me at the same time. So go on.
A chap called ProDriver555 on Instagram. He said, I was listening to your podcast. You were mentioning the expensive tractor, the county tractor which sold recently. And a friend is a tractor nerd. So I said I'd steer our conversation towards this side of things as to why it's worth what it's worth. So he's gone. Let's see what he said. Best way to describe it is it's like the difference between a short nose Quattro and a long nose Audi Quattro, so a sport Quattro. County built single digits of the short nose based on the short TW10, TW20 chassis before they moved to the S12 and the S14 change that was the long wheelbase TWs as a base build. County are a bit like ProDrive to Subarus. Okay, so it's like a rare, it's a niche version of an already niche tractor that they didn't build many of.
Right.
So I guess I'm going to call that incredible tractor the County 1474 short nose. I'm going to call that the Sport Quattro of the tractor world. There we go.
Sport Quattro.
Sport.
Good intel.
Yeah.
So there we go. That's it. Enough. That's probably enough housekeeping. But we had so many messages last week that it was just. Oh no! Shit! There is one more I want to do. Sorry.
Oh, you.
It's
Brian.
Important this one what? Because. Because it's from a patron, so they get VIP fast check-in on messages. There's a chap called Martin who was trying to set me straight on why you can't put big sort of fans on top of cooling towers.
Oh,
Martin obviously knows his shit. So I won't read out everything because it's quite complicated. But basically, he explains a little bit about how power stations work. And I said, well, I thought about a fan with a dynamo on the top. And he said, cooling towers aren't chimneys. When they're working optimally, which is most of the time, they're generating an artificial cloud column, and their shape encourages this. And nothing comes out of the top. Even when they do emit, it's a tiny fraction of the water condensing out as rain within. Oh, which is why they have the lakes at the bottom.
Yes, that's right. The lakes, the rain within.
Yeah.
Oh, that sounds like that's a single, a very heavy-hearted sort of love ballad.
Yeah, but basically he says the engineering behind a thermodynamic cycle of a power station is very clever and very complicated. If there was a way of recovering even an extra 1%, of available energy, it would be worth hundreds of millions.
Gosh.
So,
wow.
I mean, it was naive of me to think that an idea that first popped into my head when I was probably about 13 had somehow not occurred to some of the world's finest minds in thermodynamics. But it's good to have someone who knows their stuff actually setting us straight. So thank you, Martin, for that.
We've been told.
Yeah.
And we shall listen.
And
okay.
While I'm in the patron messages, I wanted to read this because it's from a chap called George Wade, who he messaged just a while ago, and I completely forgot, like in April, actually, and I completely forgot to address it. But then he messaged again to say, can we please do another old money car hunting film around London? I said we will one day, I'm sure. Or maybe not London, maybe somewhere else. We've had a few tip-offs about other old money hotspots, so we might do that. But George's original question from April was, I think he's really directing this at you because it feels like it's more up your street. I was wondering, he says, if either of you clean the keys to the cars that you've owned or own. I'm quite partial to a deep key clean of a car I've purchased. Am I a weirdo?
Ooh.
I don't feel like I am, he says.
I have done it. I think I've seen my dad do it. He puts down like an old napkin and gets an old toothbrush, which is a favourite, always a favourite of my dad in the garage, old toothbrush. And he would put Autosol on it, of which other metal cleaners are available these days.
Yeah.
And he would just he'd go for it, cleaning the shaft of the key to make sure there was no grime in it, to make sure it went in and out of the door very easily. Because obviously this is old school keys where you actually need to put them in a hole rather than blipper. But also, I find myself, I do use My mum used to have these little telephone wipes in a sachet. They look like KFC finger wipes.
Telephone wipes?
Yeah, and they stank. Like, you'd rip the top off them, this sachet.
Yeah.
And it had a picture of an old-fashioned corded telephone on it.
Of course.
And it was for cleaning the mouthpiece and the receiver of telephones, obviously, so that, especially in call centres and stuff, I guess.
Uh-huh.
And yeah. The smell was so strong once you tore the top off the
smell.
The thing. It smelled like, it was like smelling salts. I swear it was to get, if you picked up the phone and you were very drowsy, you'd immediately go, "Hello, is anybody there?"
Bah!
Oh my gosh, wow, I've got a bit
just
of a
451. What? Like a sort of alcoholy smell, like.
Yeah, really chemically, incredibly chemically, to the point where I wasn't sure whether I should be doing it barehanded.
Were these not meant to be carried around with you in case you had to use a public phone booth box type thing?
Well, I bet you that's why my mum used to carry one around.
But she would use them on the home phone?
My mum would get me... It was one of the chores that I would do periodically, you know, for pocket money. I'd vacuuming, dusting, blah, 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 boring, boring, toilet cleaning, that kind of stuff. But it would be, yeah, clean the telephones. I haven't cleaned my own... I clean my own mobile now and again with a wet wipe. But
yeah, it's worth doing, isn't it? But then yeah, just imagine the amount of grot on a touch screen.
It's the remote key fob of a second-hand car. You'd be surprised what utter grot is on that.
Yeah.
And on the steering wheel. The steering wheel's grim. Always go for it with some sort of intense degreasant on that front, on that side of things. Yeah. Definitely. I've got to go and see Non-Stop Talking John really soon. I know I said it last time.
Yeah.
I'm just dreading it. I'm putting it off. I'm procrastinating.
What?
Yet I need him to solve some electrical issues on a car. So I'm actually really inconveniencing myself because I just can't bear the fact that he might listen to Smith and Stiff and might go, anything you want to talk to me about, Johnny?
What are the chances that he has listened, do you think?
Slim, low percentage. I'm going to say sub 20%.
I mean, that's okay. Those are decent odds, I'd say. But then what if somebody else who knows him and has gone, "Oh, hang on a minute, I know who he's talking about."
Well, that's the problem. That's the bit I fear. Anyway, I used his name. I used a different name. That isn't really his name, the name I've been using up until now.
Oh, okay.
I've been
clever.
Using a different name. Yeah, very clever. So he is in my phone as Non-Stop Talking John.
Right,
but John's not necessarily his real name.
Hey, wow. See, this is your police training from your years as a SARB detective that you've... Quite clever.
Yeah, I'm hoping to get a gig on Death in Paradise where I just walk around in far too many layers in a suit on a paradise island, and an island which consists of about 100 people and yet one person dies every other week. I think that's quite a high amount of death, isn't it, per head. And also an incredible amount of terrible faux reggae in the theme tune. Really awful. Really awful.
It's sort of one of those things I would dearly like to make illegal is faux reggae.
White man's reggae is very,
yeah,
is it?
It's
just not quite right, is it?
It just
doesn't
quite.
Feel totally lacking in authenticity.
I thought of something else I would like to make illegal, or at least punishable in some extremely draconian way, because it happened to me this week, is people who are about to emerge from a side road in their car, and you can see them dithering, and then a little bit too late, they decide to go for it, but then the way they go for it is they go, "Oh no, I'm leaving it a bit late, I better do this in as cautious a way as possible," and then they pull out very slowly in a situation that in fact demands them to pull out more quickly than they might normally. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
You've dithered already. You've wasted valuable seconds with the dithering. And now you've almost gone like a little dormouse pulling out. Like, "Oh, okay. Oh, sorry, I'm going to pull out in front of you and you're going to have to brake. I'll try to lessen the inconvenience by doing it very gently. That'll help."
You suddenly turned into a Beatrix Potter character.
"I'm a tiny hedgehog in a car. Oh, if I pull out very gently, maybe you won't notice that I've fucked up and I'm an incompetent buffoon." It drives me nuts. And you do sort of see it. It's up there with brake dabbing, which we've talked about before.
Oh, I got fully dabbed. So what is it, brake checking, the term where people try and make you crash into the back of them?
Yeah.
Yeah, I had that done to me last week.
What?
Yeah, I was just taking my daughter to swimming club and there was a bloke dithering at the junction near me. And I realised he was in a Fiesta van with a phone on his ear. So I beat the horn and just did the telephone sign out of the window. Just want to make that clear. He went absolutely crackers.
Oh.
Crackers. Tried to do three emergency stops while we were driving through the town.
Bloody hell.
Oh, he was furious. It got into a full-on road rage situation. So I
but it's
decided...
such a dick move, isn't it? Because it's like,
well, it is
if this
move.
Goes to where you seem to want it to, you're going to smash up your own... van as well as someone else's car.
Oh, it's a proper... I mean, the guy was an absolute flesh trombone. But anyway, so I decided to do the only thing which I knew. My daughter thought it was probably not the coolest move that her dad's ever done. I decided to follow him with my hand on the horn for like five minutes.
Oh.
5 minutes goes by really slowly, really slowly, when you're driving through a town with a horn on. And whilst doing it, pointing at him and waving at him. While I gave my phone to my daughter and she was filming it. Is that
pointing at him? What were you hoping that people would go, who's he hooting at? Oh, that guy. Oh, I see.
No, I asked him. I went alongside him. I asked him to follow me because I wanted him to follow me to the leisure centre where I was dropping my daughter off so we could chat about it in the car park.
How many roids had you been taking at this point? Like, what?
No, I just... you got to fight fire with fire. People do stuff like that. They never follow through what they say they're going to do. So if you're really furious with me, let's go and chat in a CCTV-heavy car park. How about that?
Yeah, but that's always the flaw with CCTV, isn't it? It only records crimes happening. It doesn't necessarily prevent them in the way that it thinks it might.
Oh, no, of course it doesn't.
You just have a nice bit of footage to put online of... Our next clip is
CCTVs.
Of the TV and YouTube star Johnny Smith getting leathered by a furious amphetamine-crazed builder in a small van.
Oh, he was. He was a big lad. But, I mean, luckily, I'm pretty sure I could outrun him. So there's a lot to fall back on. Well, you know.
And then you remember that you've left that as in slippers by mistake.
Yeah, there is that. Yeah, exactly. Flip-flops on. No, the one down in flip-flops. Oh, damn it. Anyway, yeah, just thought I'd mention that. Anyway,
speaking of your Saab detective show, that I have mentioned this before, my idea for a TV show called Flip Flop Cops about two...
I've never heard you say that in your life.
I told you about this. Yeah, they're two hard-hitting maverick cops and they don't take any shit, but unfortunately they both wear flip-flops. So they're really bad at running. They're terrible at sneaking up on people because they get that kind of...
Oh, they get that slap, the sneak slap. Up slap.
They get the slap, the giveaway slap. And they're not very good at driving either, you know, because they're always riding the clutch because the flip-flop gets stuck under the pedal.
Oh, that's right. The boss refused to give them an auto despite many requests.
Yeah, so they're just as they're pulling away in a car chase. Yeah. I haven't ever pitched it, but I'm sure if I did, it would be sold immediately to the highest bidder. Flip-flop cops, you heard it here first.
I like that. Well, okay. The Fiesta's it's a white van, and it's got some reflective chevrons on the boot lid, and the number plate's KP11A.
Whoa, hang on. Are we allowed to do that?
Of course we are. I took a photo of it. Well, I've got a video of it somewhere. You're now worrying about what the legal implication. Listen, you do something wrong and you get caught, you either say I'm sorry or you act like a child, and he chose the latter.
Yeah, it's funny actually. I had a minor, I mean it didn't escalate like that, but I had one last week as well with a lady who was blocking the entrance to a car park. She was just sitting in her car. She was when I pulled in and attempted to get into the car park, and she was sitting there saying goodbye to one of her kids through the open driver's window. And then, so I sort of gave her that, you know, it's like she's saying goodbye to a kid or whatever, I think. So, you know, sort of 15, 20 seconds of that.
Did it go on a bit?
Kid ran off, and then suddenly another child came running back and wanted to talk to her. So now it's like, I was like, oh, and then went to the passenger side of the car, opened the door, wanted to get something out. And it's like, okay, all right, fine. And then the kid ran off, and then nothing happened. So I gave a polite toot on the horn. and still nothing happened, except this is an old Honda HR-V, by the way.
Oh, three abreast seating.
No, HR-V, the three-door sort of crossover type thing.
I'm thinking of FR-V, aren't I?
Yeah.
So I love the FR-Vs.
No. So then nothing happened except that she briefly, the hazards flashed. And I was like, is she sort of trying to show me that she's like, you know, doing the old, oh, if I put the hazards on, I can stop anywhere kind of trick. So I got out and I went over and the driver's window's still open. I was like, I'm going to be super polite here because there's no point in getting radgy about this. I just went, excuse me, would you mind just moving out of the way so I can get into the car park? And she absolutely kicked off.
Oh, wow.
She went, what is wrong with you? Have you no patience? I was just starting my car and I had to get my keys out and put them in the ignition. It took me no time at all. Have you no patience at all? But she's getting proper aggy about it at this point. And so I thought, well, I'm not going to rise to it. So I just went, well, that doesn't take long. And she went, well, it takes as long as it's taken you to say that. Just have some patience.
Wow.
But I was like, it was a total mismatch of things. So she went, I'm moving now. And so I went, oh, thank you very much. And she went, thank you very much, which I thought I quite enjoyed because it didn't really make sense. But I was just like, what's happened in your day that has made you this cross?
Well, the thing is, it's really easy to then start losing your temper. And I've done it. I'm not proud of it, obviously. But I think a better way to do it is to just start laughing at them. Which is what I did to this bloke that was absolutely losing his shit in the Fiesta Econetic van. He was going absolutely bonkers. So I was just laughing at him and pointing at him whilst obviously the horn was still going. I think it's probably the most. So bearing in mind that Renault Zoe's done 600 miles, I think the horn's done 600,000 miles worth of horn work. A lot of horn work.
I just remembered something that when I caused someone to get very cross, this guy trying to come down a narrow street and, you know, you've got to do that, let someone go and then they let you go, whatever. And this guy just screwed up. It was me and then two cars behind me coming down, and he had a pull-in place and he could have pulled in and he didn't. He just kept coming towards us, stopped. And then we had to do that really awkward kind of squeezing through and you desperately try not to scrape paint. And as he got level, he sort of looked at me and he kind of shrugged. And so I did a sarcastic clap and he suddenly went absolutely batshit and put his window down and called me an effing C in the manner of a capsized clown. Yeah. But he'd been sort of like, his initial expression was one of sort of like, no, sorry, no. But because I did a sarcastic clap, which I probably shouldn't have done, but it just set him off. It was amazing to see. Have you ever seen that clip of that Australian politician whose mood flips in one go?
No.
It's one of those ones, you'd know if you'd seen it. It's like, he's talking like this, and he's talking, I think he's talking about gay marriage, and he's going, you know, as I always say, there's only, you know, love is love. And then he suddenly goes, but I won't have it in the house. It's an amazing tonal shift within a split second. And this guy was like that. Oh, sorry, go you FNC!
Amazing. That's amazing. I wish I'd been the fly on the wall.
I don't know, I've never, a slow clap is actually quite a powerful, it's
a,
worse
I
than
I was going to say, a slow clap's incredibly powerful, that and met perhaps laughing at them and whilst pointing, a bit like that kid from The Simpsons,
yeah,
I forgot the name of,
Nelson.
Nelson, no, ha ha, ha ha ha.
I just also think the shake of the head, just a slow shake of the head, because what you're saying is, you've disappointed me. You've let yourself down.
Oh,
you've let everyone down.
Very disappointed. Yeah. Very disappointed.
It's like, you know, being told off at school, you've completely messed that up and you're in a lot of trouble is one thing. But when a teacher said to you, I'm very disappointed in your behaviour, that's quite crushing in a way.
I think when my wife says that to me, I think that's just I think it goes beyond school and well into your 40s. Yeah, sad but true.
I can't think of the last time my wife said I disappointed her, but I feel like it's just constant. She just internalises it. It's just...
Well, I was going to talk about an actual car this week, and I've completely forgotten what car it was.
Well, that's okay, because we're out of time.
Oh,
we've been going for an hour. And we've covered some ground. We've read out some readers' things. I feel like, you know, we've sort of achieved all that we're required by the podcasting ombudsman. So it's a good point to draw a line. I think I know which car it was, because you mentioned it last week, but it's okay. We can come to it next week and just keep kicking that.
Well, there we go.
Can down the road. There's not a lot of car news anyway, because it's August, isn't it? So it's all it's a slow news month. We have to make our own.
It is.
Our own news, which you almost did by getting into a fist fight in a leisure centre car park.
Well, I was never going to get into a fist fight, but I...
Well, you don't know that, do you? It could have escalated horribly.
Don't poke the hornet's nest.
Hornet's nest. You were a hornet.
Don't poke the hornet's nest.
The hornet's nest.
I was chasing him with a French horn, and he hated it. He said, of all the instruments to try and goad me with, it was a French horn.
Now that
horn
would be a whole different level of sort of like an art piece way to shame someone, just following them through your local town playing a French horn out of the window at them. Or
do you know,
that's
what we should do. We should invent this should be a Smith and Sniff thing. Everyone should have an emergency recorder in the glove box, and if someone pisses you off,
my God, I'm fucking furious because my wife has signed our boy up for recorder lessons next term at school.
Nobody wants that.
No,
nobody wants,
you know,
that.
I never learned the recorder as a child because my dad just went in the house. Awful noise.
I saw one up at the end of the garden. My kids don't know it yet, but saw one. Yeah, I saw one in two. You know, like a sawn-off shotgun. I thought, I'll see if it plays any differently. Sawn-off record.
as used by East End gangsters to torture people. Right, now I'm going to try craze. Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star. See how you like that.
It's the craze. They both had sawn off. Barbara Windsor said it. Oh yeah, the craze. They always used to have sawn off recorders. It's come in the pub, play green sleeves. Everyone ducked.
Yeah, they only did it for their own though. Oh, they were lovely boys. Apart from
sweet,
the old murders,
sweet guys. Yeah, they did kill a few, but they were lovely. Anyway,
right. Look, listen, guys.
Stop.
It's time to end. I have three things to tell you before we go. One, Johnny has a solo YouTube channel. It's called The Late Break Show. And of course, there's The Late Break Show Live. The next one is on the 11th of September in Leicestershire. Go to thelatebreakshow.com/live for details. Promises to be a lovely day out. I'll be there. Come and talk to us. That's all we do
please,
all day.
Please
based
come.
On what happened to the last one, we just have a good old chat with people and we do a bit of Q&A on stage, and we do a quiz and we interview guests, and the guest is Ed the China.
And you are going to be doing the car quiz.
I'm doing the quiz again. I might do a different one to make it a little bit easier. I don't know. We're going to have a chat about that, I think, later.
Multiple
on
choice.
How hard the quiz should be. But come to The Late Break Show Live. The second thing I've got to tell you is that I have various books out. Medium-sized Book of Boring Car Trivia is one of them, available exclusively on Amazon as an ebook or a paperback. And the third thing I've got to tell you is that Hovis bread gets its name from the Latin hominis vis, which means strength of man. And the brand name originally had a diacritic mark over the O in lieu of an apostrophe to show you where the abbreviation between the two words exists. Since
deleted. Wow, Richard, I'm going to start eating Hovis to make me a stronger, more attractive man, or maybe just a bloated middle-aged guy.
Yeah.
Okay.
If you want to drop us a line, hello@smithandsniff.com, or if you're one of our patrons, thank you, and you can always get a hold of us through there. And that's that for this. We'll see you again same time next week. Although it's a podcast, you can listen whenever you want.
Oh yeah, you can. Amazing.
Thank you. Goodbye.
Bye bye. I don't know, my mum and dad will contact me almost certainly and say, you shouldn't do it, you'll get stabbed. And I go, well...